Thanks, Ben.
Thank
Good
you.
talking to you, and thanks for texting me the other week and asking me to do this. Happy to do it. Nice to meet everybody. My name is Aaron Opaluski with Spark Companies. We do a multitude of workforce solutions style services and have seven companies that specialize in that. I'm a managing partner in nine companies overall, so two of those are outside of workforce solutions. Which I think is interesting for a call like this, right? Because a lot of the stuff that we do as services within our workforce solutions companies, we actually use in the other two businesses that I'm involved with. And that's where a lot of these talking points, you know, have come from. So when Ben asked me to share, this is a talk I give quite a bit, and I'm set to give it in a couple more weeks again in June on site for a group of people. So I was happy to just hop on here and do that and then take any Q&A that comes through. But that's a little background on me. You know, the point of today's discussion is to go through talent acquisition strategy. Ben had reached out and said, look, I know you do a lot of hiring. You guys do a lot of hiring. And, you know, essentially that's a big question that comes up in our group. It's constant. Like, would you be able to come on and just talk about that a little bit? I said, yeah, actually, I got like a whole list of stuff that we go through on this, and I'm happy to do it. So it's just my opinion on how we would set up the strategy. So what I would say is, you know, ultimately, you could do this to a T. You could take parts of this and implement it into what you're doing. You might go one step at a time. It's probably what I'd recommend is trying to do it all at once. We're going to cover things at kind of like a top level, but I could see where it'd be overwhelming. You know, you can't necessarily do everything at once all the time. But when we talk about like talent acquisition strategy, a lot of people focus on like, well, you know, I just need to hire people. I can't find enough good people. And that is a part of this, but let's walk through five different steps. So the first one that I focus on before you get to actually having people start with the organization is your talent funnel. So a lot of people are familiar with the sales funnel. I would look at your talent acquisition the same way. You need a talent acquisition funnel. So you need something or multiple things that are generating people into your system all the time. And this is where we work with a lot of clients because this is actually where a lot of people struggle, is just getting enough people in the funnel. None of these things are like easy to execute on. They all take a lot of work. But when you bucket these out into separate areas compared to trying to attack it just like, oh, I just gotta find better people, it starts to process it out for you. So what are some things that you can do within the funnel? Number one, you go work on your personal brand. That's probably the last thing that I would do out of what I'm going to list from a tactical standpoint, but it is very impactful. When you work on your personal and your company brand, it will filter in more people to talk to you. Now, some people with an RTA do this well. Some people may be just starting on that. You know, we have a good brand within our workforce solutions, but overall, like, you know, I don't have this like massive personal brand either, but within what we do, we have a track record that we've built, and it's a big reason why we've been able to grow up to seven companies in a 10-year span, because we have a track record and we have people that are attracted to coming to work with us. Now, the better someone gets at this, and I won't go into like huge details on each of these points, but this is important. If any of you were in RTA, so you've all heard Andy talk about this. He's obviously got a great personal brand. First of all, has a great company brand. And a lot of people are interested and excited to go work there. What's one of the number one issues they have with that? He's talked about it in a few of his podcasts. He's talked about it on a few of his calls. I've had personal discussions, you know, with him about this, you know, years ago. And I think it's only intensified for him more as his brand continues to grow. People look at, you know, what is going on there, and they're like, man, I want to be a part of that. And that's awesome. But then they're not willing to do the hard work and commit to what it actually takes on a day-to-day. So as you do grow that, it's a positive, but that's the number one thing is you got to figure out how to set really good expectations as they're coming into that funnel. We can do a whole call on that. We're going to keep moving, but I thought that would be an example that would just resonate with everybody. He's pointed it out. That's his words, not mine. That's been one of their main problem points with hiring is people that come in that love the brand and think like, man, that place is just going to be so great to work at. And it is, but it doesn't mean that the work's not hard day to day. Doesn't mean that there's not a sacrifice or things that you got to do and not everyone, you know, works out. So what's some other things that you can do? You can use outsourced recruiting support. You can use job boards like an Indeed. You can use referrals. You can use different types of technology to deploy people into your funnel. Within your job boards, give you a couple things on this. It's very important that you optimize your job posts. Now, that's something that we do for companies all the time because it's one thing to set it up. What you got to be doing, there's a timing aspect to this too. When stuff comes into your funnel, no different than in sales. Well, if you wait 2 weeks to get back to anybody, they're going to be gone. They're going to go somewhere else. So it's important to create the funnel and then to be working through and nurturing the funnel at the same time. But some couple of takeaways that if you get nothing else from this call and help you out today, if you're posting on Indeed or LinkedIn or anywhere else, but I'm going to specifically go with Indeed because a lot of people post there, make sure you don't abbreviate anything. So for example, if someone was hiring a junior account manager, do not put JR period on that. Spell out junior or just put account manager or entry-level account manager. Nowhere do you want an abbreviation. It's going to drop your views down immensely. You won't have as many people see it. That's not something that everyone knows. Maybe you did know that, but that's key. Second thing, and there's many more, but I'm just trying to give you a couple that you could literally go, and if you have any jobs out there, go switch these things today, and it will up your funnel and you'll get more views. Another thing would be if you have job titles that are different from like an industry standard job title, that's okay internally. If you have a director of client experience or, you know, something like that, something along the lines, if you call an operations role, something that has like a unique name to your business internally, that's fine. When you post this online, that's your time. Or like if it's a human resource manager type role, like you want to post it as that externally, because when you post it with your unique job title, it's going to lower the views immensely. There was that one time years ago, the inverse was true. You would post a unique title, it would actually raise your views. That's not the case right now. If it changes, I'll make sure to message Ben and let people know. But over the last 2 years specifically, they've really drilled down on that. And your views go up when you have the more technical job title that people have on like their LinkedIn profile or what you would normally see in a company. So there's probably about 50 other things we could talk on Indeed. I don't even know them all specifically because we have experts that work just specifically within that. And you can read between the lines, like within even how you phrase stuff in your job title, anything that's like your unique language, you can get that out of that and use more like straightforward, clear, concise language. It will help your views and people also will read that better. They're more likely to keep going on the description. So that's the talent funnel. And I want to write these down. This is more for me than you. My writing is not good, but this keeps me on track. You got your talent funnel, getting people in. Number two, you got your interview process. So your interview process is an important thing that a lot of people will do, right? You're going to interview people, but it's what you do in that process. It's how you execute that's important. So a lot of things you can do within different roles. There's phases to this. I'm going to give an example that we literally just did today. So in one of my businesses that is not in Workforce Solutions, it's a pizza franchise. We have 5 stores in Dayton, Ohio. Jet's Pizza. If any of you are in Dayton, Ohio, we'd love to have your business there. It's good pizza. But when we took over the stores, we acquired these stores 6 months ago. And we had like 16 or 17 openings at all. Like it was a mess. We had too many openings. We had people working too much overtime. People that were quitting because they were burned out. Couldn't schedule properly. We're having trouble opening some of the stores. Like we inherited a mess when we acquired these stores and that. Maybe that sounds familiar to some of you. Well, what was happening is I went and toured these stores. We took over the stores in July, and I physically went down and toured the stores in September. I asked the store managers one question: how many interviews are you getting a week? And they laughed. Everyone laughed. All five store managers just kind of looked at me and chuckled. They're like, a week. We're lucky to have one a month. And so I said, okay, so essentially, you're telling me anyone that walks through the door, we're hiring. Well, yeah, what questions are we asking them? Well, we basically, if they show up like and they say they can work, we're gonna give them a shot. Okay. Well, that's why we had 17 open spots. And we had a funnel problem that we fixed first. That was phase one. We did not try and fix this all at once. And actually, we've got Dom, who runs one of our companies day to day, Spark Packaging. They do a lot of our food and beverage style placements. And he is actually running this program for us in these Jet's Pizzas down in Dayton, Ohio. I like to eat my own dog food. Like it works, this stuff works. So we started that phase one, which is the talent funnel, in September. I think we might have actually started in October by the time we started. Well, now we sit here today on February 15th, and for the last since the beginning of the year, we've held at 1 to 2 openings every week for the last 7 weeks, which is the beginning of 2024. That's a huge improvement. It doesn't mean that there's not room for more improvement or that we have everything perfect within that talent funnel. But what we did is we had no one coming in. We used an outsourced solution and we put stuff into the funnel. We used Indeed. We were posting on Indeed and no one was calling anybody in that business. Well, that's not good. It's not only are we not calling anybody, but it's also negative to our brand. Like, oh, we applied and then we never heard back from them. Not good. Well, we all outsourced all that to Dom and his team. And over that period of time, we got that down to an opening here or there. And I think we're still at two sitting here today, and that holds pretty standard. And that's been the same for the last 7 weeks. Well, that's big progress. So one, thank you, Don. Appreciate that. Very helpful. Two, now we're ready to move on to phase two with that group of store managers. We didn't want to throw this all at them at once. That wasn't my strategy. So I thought it would be impactful to share this because I'm showing you where I've deployed it in one of my own businesses, and I'm literally on phone calls on this right now, and I'm on phase two, which is interview process. And so what we're doing now is we want those store managers asking the same five questions. We picked five. We want uniformity in the job interview process for people that walk through. We also add like paper applications. We're switching to a QR code when they walk in the door. Stuff like that. There's some other things that we're putting in place too. But we want the same five questions for anyone that's going to be an entry level like crew member, and the same five questions for if someone's going to be a driver. So we have two sets of questions. Those are the positions that we hire for walk-ins. It's another kind of interview set if someone walks in with experience and we're going to interview them for like an assistant manager or something like that. But in the past, there's no uniformity. So now we're in phase two and we're working on our uniformity, which is part of the interview process. So that's one thing. You can set up your interview process however you want. I recommend a 2 to 3 step process. I personally like three. The three is this: you do an initial phone screen with somebody, and that might be off Indeed, right? Where you're getting a general sense for them. We then like having them fill out a survey. Then there's a secondary interview that is a skills assessment interview. You evaluate them on their skill set. And then a third interview, and it depends on the size of your company. This could be all you. For me, within all our companies, still day to day at the Workforce Solutions ones, because that's what I work on more day to day, is our Workforce Solutions stuff. I still interview on the final interview, and that's a value style interview. I'm assessing someone for culture, their characteristics, and their values. Now, are they going to be perfect on our core values at that point? Absolutely not. That's our job to guide them and teach them. But I need to see characteristics. I need to see things that show me the potential for them to fit well within our system. We happen to hire a lot of people with no experience because we want to teach them our way and we build them from the ground up. Purpose of our company is to help people grow, and we do that from the ground up, right? Well, so I can't look for past experience with a lot of candidates. I got to look for characteristics that I believe match our values. We won't get into that today because everyone's got different core values and you need to assess what's important on that to you. But it's important to me that you do some kind of assessment. Now, if you want to try and mash that into one interview or two, that's okay. We found it more impactful to split those up. Now, within that, our goal is to do all that within a week. So we don't want someone hanging out for a long time. And you do got to assess this. Within our pizza franchises, we don't do three interviews for the entry levels. What we do is Dom's team actually does that funnel call for us, where they assess them and they drop them in. Say, this person is a good candidate at an entry level. We think that they have the characteristics to show up on time. They can hit the schedule. Like, they want to learn. We feel like they're going to be a value set, but at minimum, like, everything makes sense for them to be looked at for coming into the business. Then our store manager does a skills assessment, which in that type of role is pretty light. Like, we're going to teach them how to make pizzas. Okay, cool. And then the third part of that, and it's in the same interview, is they also do some things with three core values inside of that business. And I like it that way because it's pretty simple and concise. And that's one of the things that helps them assess on at the same time. Maybe we'll flip that down the road as they get more acclimated to this, but that's the process that we're trying to implement with them now. And literally we're talking to them about that right now. Right now we have our general manager that runs around those stores and he's doing that as much as we can. So we have that framework, but it's all in the execution, right? And so in order to execute it, we need our store managers and ultimately our assistant managers in those stores to know how to do that. But you'll notice I didn't dump all this on them in July when we took over the stores. We're going in phases. We want to see improvements and we're ready to move on. So those are some things that you can do in the interview process. Third part, your onboarding process. So for onboarding, it's candidate experience. The time, basically from when they accept an offer to when they start, sometimes the same day, could be a week, could be a 2 week notice, could be longer. You want to be interacting with them in multiple touch points within that along the way. So you got to assess what that timeline is, but you want to make sure you're making them feel welcome, that they know what's going to happen when they come in. Like, it sounds like, man, that's like overkill, but right down to like, hey, where do they park? Who should they ask for on the first day? Where should they sit? Is things set up for them? Should they prepare anything up front? Like, all this stuff, the more you lay this out and make it really comfortable, because you have someone, depending on the role level, could be a complete life change for their family. It could just be a new role, right? And maybe their first job or something. Like, whatever it is, people don't naturally like change. It's a big change for them when they change jobs. It's parts of that that's uncomfortable. It's our job to create a good candidate experience, a good experience coming in. And so that's a big part of it. How do you welcome them? You know, do you have all their stuff set up? Is there something that welcomes them? Does everyone greet them? They shake their hand? Are they taken out to lunch? If you have any swag or anything that just to show them they're part of the team? Some people will ship that out before they start. Like, we have it on people's desks their first day. Both work. You know, if you don't have any of the like actual materials to give to someone, well, I can still make them feel welcome. I can make sure we do the touch points. I can make sure everyone says hello to them in the day, or at least I lead by example on that. Can I structure my schedule in a way that when people start from my organization, that either I am taking them out to like a lunch, you know, on the first day, and I do recommend the first day, not the first week, or someone, their leader, you know, the team that they're going to be a part of, depending on the size and scope of your business. Like, could someone do these things? It is a time allocation. You know, you could look at it as, you know, spending time or wasting time, or like, man, it's going to be hard to put that time in. I would challenge everyone to look at that as an investment of your time. You're investing in bringing this person out of your business, your baby. You want to do things that help set it up to get the best out of them. And so these are some of the little things, because I don't think it's usually with bad intentions. I mean, I don't think if anyone has bad intentions about someone joining their company, like they're not going to have a company very long. It's more that we all have a lot of stuff going on. So some thought into how to execute this and understanding that, like, man, this is a way that I can improve my retention. This is a way I can attract people. I can actually improve my referrals, my reviews. I can just do better, you know, within this if I have this set up well. The second part of onboarding is the training that you do. It's different for every type of job, but I would consider that part of the onboarding. Maybe that's one day, maybe it's a week, maybe it's 2 weeks. We've seen, depending on the role, sometimes it's 3 months. You know, that's pretty long for like an onboarding training. It really becomes more of like a apprenticeship or something that's at some point. We've got to have that figured out. Do you have a trainer? Do you put them with one person that's really good with inside your business? Is that you right now in your business? But how are they going to be trained? Whatever you can do to not just drop them in and have them go figure it out is going to be helpful to you in retaining people. So I've been there where I was the only one, or we had a handful of people. And it's like, how do we do this? It's really tough. Hey, you know, when we first started out, like there was times it was kind of like a sink or swim environment. And there's some positives to that too, because some people come out of that and they might mark some great things. But our retention early on has improved so much by deploying some of this stuff and investing time and setting that up. And it also helps people become more effective sooner. And as your team grows, I think this becomes more important, because part of the training, this takes me right into part four, training and development. So your training and development, let me write down three. Come back over here so I can stay on track. Okay, onboarding process. And again, your initial training is part of that. But then you got training and development, which to me is ongoing. The last thing we want is to put someone into our business, do some general training with them, and then like that's it. I think we all probably want people to keep improving, getting better, become more effective, help the business grow, make more money. These are all like really important things that we all desperately desire when we hire people. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't hire them. If that's why we're hiring, because we see the opportunity to grow. So with training and development, I look at it like, okay, how do you do that? Well, when you're smaller, this is really effective. You get small unit cohesion. You've got a couple people on the team and everyone's kind of attached to the hip. And generally, you as the operator of the business are the best producer at that point too, right? So they get really good. They can pick up on a lot of good behaviors. They can also pick up on bad ones, but they're going to see stuff that works within the business if you're an expert within your business. And that works really, really well. So if you have 2, 3, 4, 5 people, I would absolutely use that to your advantage. You want to use that to your advantage. But as you're growing, you hit these different growth points, you know, you go from 5 to 10, you go from 10 to 20, you start to lose that small unit cohesion. And just kind of having people kind of all working together in a circle and doing day-to-day training with like a free-flowing focus of that, like no really actual intention to it, it starts to not work as well, starts to lose its luster, because you can't be as close to everybody every day. They're not going to see, they might see pockets, they don't see everything. They don't communicate with you as much. And so you start to lose some of that small unit cohesion. And now it's when some of this other stuff becomes important. So as you're growing, you know, some things that you can do is look at your org chart structure and start to deploy other people to have the responsibility to train people coming in within your business. What you got to be really careful about here is you got to make sure that the people that you're doing that with are a core value match. You hope that they might not be your best performer, but they at least have to be capable of teaching like the core fundamental skill sets. And you want them to be some of your best core value people. This is where we hire people with a good skill set, but we bend on the values. This is where I think, to give you a tangible example of where this starts to bite you, it can bite you at other times too, but it really starts to bite you at this point Because then you're adding people to the organization. They're getting trained how to do some things well, but they're also getting trained to cut some corners and to do things that are adversarial to your core values. Now you just have more people that are adversarial to what you want the company to be. And that's where frustration, confusion, and generally at the same time, if not before, shortly thereafter, a drop in profits, productivity, morale, all come with that too. And I sit here before you today, there's opportunity in that. There's opportunity to grow your mindset, you know, your ability to conquer adversity within that. It can push you to new levels of success. I think sometimes we need that. I know I've needed that, where it's like, I got to fail on some stuff to realize that we got to make some changes. But we'd all like to learn from other people's failures or frameworks that can help us kind of keep moving along and do that as little as possible and just keep succeeding. So what you can do that with an org chart structure and start to do that. Just be careful that you don't just like, okay, well, we got 8 people and we need these 3 people to lead these next 3 people that come in. And well, you know, they're a C minus on core values, but that's what we got. So like, let's just roll with it. I would be really careful about deploying that strategy. Inversely, if you have 2 or 3 people that are great core value fits and good fundamentally within their role, and you want to hire a couple more people within that role, I think you got the perfect opportunity to hire, you know, if you had 2 people like that, I'm in a great position to hire at least 2 more people. And then I want to see them hopefully train those people the same way. And then can we do that again? This kind of, can we do it with 4? And you grow it that way. It's easier said than done, but it is doable. But if you go too fast or you kind of cut corners on that, you run into some other issues. Okay, some other things that you could do is classroom style trainings. You could do that once a week, once a month, once a quarter. You could do it once a year, but I wouldn't recommend that. I like once a month, and it depends on the size of the team. It depends on your situation. Maybe once a week is right for you. You know, we have a lot of different meetings set up where we talk about stuff on like a weekly cadence. There's daily stand-up meetings, and then we try to do monthly trainings. It's actually something we've grown quite a bit over the last couple of years. And we made some promotions to new roles in the last 6 months. And we've actually realized we're off that cadence of monthly classroom style trainings internally within our workforce solutions companies. And so we're adjusting that right now. We literally just talked about it this Tuesday in our weekly meeting. So these are a flowing thing, right? There's points in your business, maybe due to growth, hopefully due to growth, where they need to be adjusted, tweaked, recalibrated, no different than anything else. Like, things require, you know, some TLC, some maintenance and repair, or just, you know, you got to put an emphasis on it. And it's not like you just set it and then never touch it again. Okay. So that's kind of the training side. When I think of development, the number one area on that is I recommend you do one-on-ones with your reports. Well, I like to look at it like the one-on-ones are their meeting. It's not really my meeting. That person come to me with their questions, things that are going well, things that they need to work on, if they have issues, if they don't understand something, like it's their meeting. If we have extra time and I have some questions, we'll get into that. But if I'm listening well within that, what I can do is I can start, and especially as we're doing this, I do them on a bi-weekly cadence. And right now I have more reports than I've had in a long time. I have 8. I say 7 to 10 is your max. I personally like to be at like 4 or 5. I'm at 8 right now. That's where I'm at, which is good because we've grown, we've added some stuff, and it's awesome, but it's something to watch. So write that down too. If you're looking for a number on reporting, I wouldn't recommend going over 7 to 10 for anybody. And the more of a newer leader they are, the more I'd like to stay at a 1-to-1 ratio. You kind of figure out the gaps in between that. But on the development side, in those meetings, I'm listening and I'm learning about the person, and I can really set up within like a review cadence, whether that be annually, quarterly, you could do whatever, monthly. I like doing kind of like a quarterly meeting, even though we don't formally call them reviews internally, a quarterly meeting where we're kind of checkpointing on, I deal with a lot of our operators. So like Dom and I will do one-on-ones and we'll look through numbers monthly. Well, quarterly, we look at more of our, how we're doing on our mission, for the year, where are we at for the quarter? And in that meeting, I'm probably going to tie some of that stuff to some of his long-term goals. I know some of his long-term goals. I'm not going to share them all on this call. Think that generally is a private thing between you and the people that you're working with. But you want to know what those things are. And I want to be, if I'm going to be a good leader, hopefully I'm pushing how what our mission is, what our objectives are going to get us closer to those goals, not just of the company, but for him personally. Well, I don't learn that without listening, asking questions. You can put together like goal sheet, like different sheets for people and stuff. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I personally like to do it more at a one-on-one level. Found that to work better and get more honest answers because I don't really just like force someone to put it on paper. I'm just asking them questions and we're determining that as we get to know each other and as our working relationships developing too. So you can do that stuff. Now, the fifth thing, and this kind of works at lockstep, is you want to have career paths and career maps. So career paths within a role, like what is the path for the person to grow within your organization? And then the map is an actual visual of that. So we got a career path and a career map. And so for us, what that looks like for us is on our career paths, like I can go, we have like nine career paths right now. We have a lot. We started with one, and then that's evolved, over a period of time as we've grown. Well, these career paths, for me, it's all about how people learn. So for me, I'm really good with that. I'm a numbers person. You can show me that, okay, here's this level, here's this number for salary. Here's this number for commissions or bonuses or whatever. Hey, and when X happens, when they cross X, that creates Y and they go to this next level. And you just keep going down, down, down. It's just numbers. For me, that clicks for me. That's all I need to see. And it's, you want to have that because you definitely want to have your technical numbers down on like what roles are, and you want it clear what your compensation plan is. So it's very important. You can do that other ways. We like to recommend doing that in a career path because it documents it all. And then you're also going to have that where it's got some visual aspects to it. But a career map, and I'm no artist, so I don't make our career maps, other people do, but it literally should look like a roadmap. We like to have them go up, pushing like a visual look at growth, right? How does this grow? Or where does this actually break off? And it could go to another path. Like if any of you ever hiked, you hike a trail and there's other paths that break off and go a different direction. And those can go up too. That's kind of what that looks like, or what I'd explain that as is like, hey, like you could start in this entry-level role, and then there's this fork in the road where you could go this way or that way, or maybe there's multiple ways, right? Well, as entrepreneurs, like people like us, like we can see this in our head and visualize it like pretty well. That's probably why we're all here. You hear Ed talk about this a lot, and I completely agree. Well, okay, that is good. And that's why we're here. Well, a big part of how much we can grow is we got people that need to be able to see the vision. They need to be able to see how they fit inside of it. Now, there's other things that I'd recommend with that. Within the understanding of people's goals and the stuff that we were talking about before. But this is a great way to do that, is have your map, refer to it, point to it. When someone gets promoted, roll it out and show the rest of the team. This is what this person's role was. Here's where they're at now. We have the luxury at this point, because a lot of our people have been promoted within. Our CRO, he started an entry-level recruiting role. Our vice president of operations, she started at the front desk. Our vice president of recruiting was our first intern ever. Our payroll leader started at the front desk. On and on and on and on. Well, if we're doing our weekly meetings and we want to talk about like career paths, career maps, we don't have to talk about it in theory. We could pull this out and show a track record and people know, but sometimes it's good to remind them and show them visually, because again, it connects for different people in different ways. It might connect me just saying that, but when I look at this roadmap out and say, hey, this person started entry level, they started here, and now they're here, on this path. For some people, that just clicks better. And for me, I don't care really which way it clicks for someone. I want to get kind of all the different ways that can click for people and communicate in all those ways, because that's, again, the best way to not just attract the most people into the funnel, but hopefully then retain and grow them and make them feel like they fit inside the organization and the vision you have for it. So that's the overview today. I think I want about 35 minutes.